Well, we appreciate the presence of everyone. We lost some of our visitors. Always good to have them showing up. Give us a boost. We've still got some visitors. Lost a few, but good to have all of them here today. Appreciate their presence. And what a meal. I must comment on the excellent food that we have. We have every week. That takes a lot of time and work, and we appreciate that. Very, very fine. Good to have these youngsters up front. I'm telling you, I can keep an eye on them up here. That's good. Glad that they're there. When I was growing up, you know, our parents really, they really watched us and made us sit in certain places, and it was just, it was serious business. You grew up learning. Study is enjoyable and it's meaningful and it's important and it's different from everything else we do. And worship is just a precious thing. And I still have those impressions, and you do too, from your childhood. And these boys are getting those things too, and girl back there. It's just a wonderful thing. The lesson this afternoon is entitled, When Friends Are Involved. When Friends Are Involved. Little Ridgely Hollifield likes to tease me about my friends. He always wonders if I have any friends. Well, I have a few, maybe not as many as you have. And wherever Ridgely goes, he runs into somebody he knows. I don't know that they're all friends, but he visits with them like they are. So I don't know. But I've got a few friends and I've got a few enemies. But you know, friends are different from enemies in remarkable ways. And we all want some friends. And it's enjoyable to have some friends. And friendship is a great thing. And we just sang, I had Seth lead that song. Because the ultimate friendship, of course, is between us and God. And the Lord is our friend. John 15:14, ye are my friends, he said, if you do the things that I say. Isn't that something? He didn't use the word neighbor. Or acquaintance, or brother, whatever. He said, you're my friend. If you do the things. Now, they were already his disciples. But you're my friends if you do the things that I say. Amazing, isn't it? And so I want us to think about some things very hurriedly here, point by point. What's involved in this? The first point is, our friends, well, frankly, they can be a nuisance. The first point, they can be a bother. Well, I know this by experience, but I know it also from the Scripture. Luke chapter 11, when the Lord is discussing the necessity of prayer. And not just that, but importunate prayer. You must keep on praying to God no matter what. Never stop praying. Never stop doing that. I'm reminded of a time when Winston Churchill was invited to speak somewhere. And he got up and he said, never, never, never quit. And he sat down. Now that's the kind of speech I enjoy. Now that's a great speech. Never, no matter what, never quit. And Jesus is saying in Luke 11:5, don't you ever stop praying. And in his illustration of it, he says, which of you shall have a friend? This is verse 5. Which of you shall have a friend and shall go unto him at midnight? There's a friend showing up, not just after dark, showing up at midnight. He used to have a fellow call me from California. It would be 11, 12 o'clock at night. That's why I got answering service. Finally. One reason I got it, finally. But their time zone is different. And I don't know if he ever thought about that. He'd call and I'd hear June talking and knew who it was. I'd get out of the house. A friend calling or coming at midnight. It's awful, isn't it? And then he says to the one inside, friend. That's what he says. Friend, lend me 3 loaves. Puts it on the very good basis. I need a friend. I need help right here. Then I notice this. There's another friend. For a friend of mine is come. 3 times we've got the word. A friend of mine is come from a journey, and I have nothing to set before him. And he from within shall answer and say, trouble me not. The door is shut, is now shut My children are with me in bed. I cannot rise and give thee. What a bother. What a bother. But then Jesus says, I say unto you, though he will not rise and give him because he is his friend, because of his importunity, that is, he just kept on knocking. You know, finally he said, okay, Lord, get up. As soon as he get up and see that who's at the door, he just keeps on. He won't quit. And Jesus says, because he just kept on, finally the fellow inside gets up and gets him what he needs. Now, he's not saying, you know, that God is in all respects like the man inside, but he is saying, I'm telling you, if that works with people in those kinds of situations with all of our frailties, don't you think it works even better when God hears his children knocking at the door? And they just keep on knocking, and they just keep on knocking, and they keep on knocking. And that's his point. So he says, you know, you need to knock. You need to knock. You need to ask. You need to seek. You need to knock. And it shall be opened unto you. So there's an amazing thing. But the first thing on friends, unfortunately, not because we want to, but sometimes we are a bother. Number two, friends are recipients of more communication. You ever thought about this? And this comes from John 15:15. Jesus says to his disciples one day, no longer do I call you servants. John 15:15. No longer do I call you servants. For the servant knoweth not what his Lord doeth. But I have called you friends. For all things that I heard from my Father, I have made known unto you. Friendship increases communication. Usually. Now, some of you people just don't communicate with each other. It's a beatenest thing. I've never seen anything like it in my life. You just don't relay messages. I'll sometimes ask one of you, sometimes when I tell so-and-so, I'll say later, did you do it? And then sometimes, well, I forgot or whatever. Maybe. But then among yourselves, just yourselves, there seems to me just a gap, a humongous gap in communication. But I'm just kind of an outsider looking in for the kinfolk. But usually friendship intensifies communication. So Jesus says, I'm not going to just call you servants. I'm going to call you my friends. Why? Because friends are more intimate in what they relay to their friends. I'll tell you things I won't tell my enemies. I'll tell you things I won't tell strangers. I'll tell you things that I won't tell acquaintances that aren't, you know, near and dear to me. Friendship intensifies communication. And so when friends are involved, as you know by personal experience, we say more, we talk more usually among ourselves and to each other and relay messages that we think need to be provided. That's a good thing. It's a good quality of friendship. Number three, look at Luke 14 and verse 12. Did you realize that friends receive, they're not the only ones, but this is a good classification for them. Friends receive invitations. Dustin, do you want to come over to my house and visit for a little while? I don't just say that to everybody that I see outside. I don't say to the postmaster, do you want to come home with me today? But I'll say something to friends, you know, do you have time to sit down and visit, you know, or I'll give you a Dr. Pepper, a drink of water, or whatever. Would you like to do this or that? To friends. In Luke 14, Jesus is discussing this point in verse 12, I believe it is. I haven't even gotten to the chapter. He's trying to teach us, though, to go beyond this. I'm pulling this lesson out of a context where he's trying to say, you need to learn to seek the good of people that are not close to you and people that you may not know so well. And we try to do that. We try to seek the good of all men and do what we can, but still there's this classification. But he said also unto him that had bidden him, when thou makest a dinner or a supper, call not thy friends nor thy brethren. It's not an absolute prohibition, but he's saying simply, don't do this only. Don't only call friends and brethren or kinsmen or rich neighbors. Lest haply they also bid thee again. You don't simply, you know, stay in your element where you just are among friends. You need to be courteous and kind and helpful to those who cannot return what you can give. Now that's interesting, isn't it? Now I don't invite you over because I want you to invite me. I don't do that. But I have noticed in a lifetime of experience that there's usually reciprocation, not always, but quite often reciprocation follows invitations. But he says, just be mindful of those that cannot return the invitation. But in saying all of that, of course, he mentions the friends that we do invite. And that's what we do among friends. We send out invitations and we have so much fun. We have so much. That was fun last night at Randy's and Eva's. Having all those friends there together and all that good food and all those kids having fun. That was wonderful. That was wonderful. And so friends receive invitations. Number four. Friends always have my best interest at heart, even if they don't know what my best interest is. That's the way it works with friends. S.T.W. Gibbs said years and years ago at the Brown Trail Church, he was preaching there, maybe, I guess it was a gospel meeting. He said, if somebody does not rejoice in your good fortune, he's not your friend. Now, I've thought about that and how true that is. If something very good happens to you, you know, and if I'm a friend, I'll rejoice in that. If Risley says, well, we just struck oil. Or Randy said, we just have a gas well coming in or whatever. Or I sold these cattle and boy, they brought a humongous price. Or this and this and this. Or I got a good medical report. Or I got my driver's license. Finally. Or we won a football game. Or we did this. And if it's, you know, a thing that it's meaningful to you, I rejoice with you. I don't say, well, good now. Well, anybody could do that. Or, you know, well, I got mine years ago or whatever it was. Have you ever noticed people that try to take joy out of the air? They try to take joy out. They won't let you be happy. If something good happens, yeah, but I don't like that. We do rejoice in the good fortunes of our friends, and my friends have my best interest at heart. Now, even if they don't know at the moment what it is. You know, Peter on one occasion, Matthew 16:21, tried to persuade Jesus that what he just said was not so. Jesus said, I've got to go to Jerusalem. I'm going to be mistreated down there. I'm going to be killed down there. No, sir, we're not going to let this happen to you. And Jesus said, get thee behind me, Satan. It wasn't because he did not appreciate his friend's good intention. Peter meant the Lord well all the time. And in the garden when he drew his sword, he was trying to protect his Lord. He was a friend to Christ. He didn't always understand the full import of the Lord's complex mission and how that you can't keep him from the cross if he's going to die for all men. He didn't understand that at first. So his intention was to always protect him. And the other apostles said that they would go down to Jerusalem and die with him. So it's one of those things you share. It's a shared feeling. It's just like, I want my good done and I want your good done too. But whether they know what's good for me or not, they do have my best interest at heart. And number five, they may become, some of my friends may become my best or favorite associates. Now all friends won't be because of the situation or where we live or maybe personalities or whatever. But some of my friends become some of my best associates. You have thought, and these little kids probably in Bible class have thought a lot about David and Jonathan. Why is that even in the Scriptures? All about David and Jonathan and Jonathan's a soul, we're told, 1 Samuel 18:1 and 20:17, his soul was knit to David's. Can you imagine? And there have been friends, boys have had boyfriends and girls have had girlfriends, just close, very close. And it's a very unique association. A very unique association. Jonathan always knew, while his father did not, that God was giving the kingdom to David. Jonathan picked up on that very, very early. He knew what was coming. And so Saul's family was coming to an end as far as the throne was concerned. Saul couldn't stand it. And he would sometimes just be on the... It looks like he's just slipping in and out of sanity. It's what it looks like as he struggles with David. He's in and out of sanity. Jonathan had it figured out, but he loved his daddy. Caught between a rock and a hard place. And he went to his last battle with his daddy and died with his daddy on the battlefield. And after they both died, 2 Samuel 1, David talks about that. Talks about that. And just like at funerals, we magnify the good. We expand on the good. Saul had hunted David like a dog. And David says they were lovely and pleasant in their lives. And he just has his mind on certain things. He's excluding certain personal experiences. He knew how Saul got. But he's thinking about that. And we're told in 2 Samuel 1:26 that the love that he and Jonathan had for one another... Now, think about this. If you haven't already, it says it surpassed the love of women. Have you ever thought about that verse? I've wondered about it for years, never did understand it. I think I'm getting closer to understanding it a little bit. You know, in the Garden of Eden, you needed a man and a woman. That was a tremendous love. And that's the tremendous love that, you know, perpetuates humanity on the earth. And yet he said, there's a sense in which Jonathan and David had a relationship, a love that surpassed the love of women. Now, David had some unfortunate experience with a wife, Saul's daughter, very unfortunate experience. But he had some other better experiences with wives. We know that too. But I think maybe what it is saying, I'm not sure, you do your own thinking and studying, but I think perhaps what it is saying is that the kind of relationship that obtain between, and that can obtain between two girls or between two boys, it does not have to involve the tension of trying to come to an understanding of the other sex. Now that's a challenge. And you have to stay in school there for several years to get that kind of figured out. And all the time you're living with this person of the opposite sex, you know, I don't understand her. And, well, I don't understand. Why are men like that? Why are men like this? Well, why are women like that? You know, and that tension, we tell jokes about it. But we understand its significance. But it's a challenge. And that's why Peter says, husbands, dwell with your wives according to knowledge. It's not automatic. It's not inherent. It has to be learned. But when two girls are friends or two boys are friends, there's nothing to learn. And there's no tension. The friendship can go on without having to spend several years trying to figure out why is she like that? Or why is he like that? It's killing me, you know? And that's the best I can do right now. And if you have more on that, let me know. But that's a challenging passage right there. But it's giving a very significant brute fact about the way it was, it seems to me. Unless you take the position, well, David is simply, just like other things, like their lives being pleasant and lovely, he's sort of exaggerating that maybe. But I really think that maybe what we're getting into there is part of the answer. Number six, right quickly. Friends may take the place of kinfolk in your life. I'd rather be with you than some of my relatives. That may be true with you. Then again, you may not rather be with me than some of your relatives. But I've got some relatives. I'd rather be with you. Why? Because you love the Lord. You love the church. You love the truth. And they don't. That's the difference. I was in school with a man one time. And he had two sisters. This was before he was a Christian. He was close to one sister. After he became a Christian, he and this other sister, the other sister became a Christian, the one he wasn't so close to when he was growing up. And things shifted. After both of them became Christians, and the one that he had been close to didn't, he got closer to the other one. The other one didn't understand that. But that's what I'm saying. I'm close to those who love God, who love the truth, who love the gospel, who love the church. We can talk about the same sorts of things. We look at things the same sort of way. Friends take the place of relatives. Proverbs 18:24, there is a friend that sticketh closer than a brother. So God let me in on that insight long before I experienced it myself. It's there. And then number seven, They may be entrusted with important messages. This is something I'd never seen before, getting this this lesson up. And by the way, I got this lesson up when I couldn't sleep one night. I've got another sermon that I call When Men Could Not Sleep. I don't think I've preached that one here yet. And if I ever think about it at the right time, I may preach one like that again. But I couldn't. I got to thinking about this lesson, and I was planning on another one for today, but I wanted to do this. But I never had seen this point in Luke's account of Luke chapter 7 and verse 6. Now, here's a certain centurion starting in verse 2. Now, Matthew doesn't give me all of the details that this one that I'm going to mention that we have right here. A certain centurion. Centurion servant who was dear unto him. A centurion has a servant, and he's a dear servant, not just somebody that works for him. He's a dear friend, as it were, was sick and at the point of death. And when he heard concerning Jesus, he sent unto him. Now watch this. First of all, his first appeal to Jesus is made by Jewish elders. He sends Jewish elders who he thinks can have influence with Jesus, who is a Jew, who knows this centurion and who will plead his cause admirably. So he sends them first, asking him that he would come and save his servant. And they, when they came to Jesus, besought him earnestly, saying, "He is worthy that thou shouldest do this for him. For he loveth our nation, and he himself built us our synagogue." And isn't that something? So he knows I can count on these Jewish elders, these prominent religious people, to sway Jesus to come here because they know that I have tried to help the Jews. Even though he's a Gentile in the army. Incredible. And Jesus went with them, and when he was now not far from the house, the centurion sent, you see that word right there? He sent friends. Here's another appeal. He sent friends to him, saying unto him, "Lord, trouble not thyself, for I am not worthy that thou shouldest come under my roof. Wherefore neither thought I myself worthy to come unto thee." Isn't that something? I sent the first group because I'm unworthy to be in your presence. And I'm sending the second group, my friends, because I'm not worthy that you should come into my house. My goodness. And then he does, you know, what Matthew talks about. Says, "I understand authority. I say to this servant, go, and he goes. And this one, come, and he comes. Into this servant, do this or do that." And Jesus marveled. He said, "I don't have to be present to get things done. I can send soldiers and I can send servants. I understand that principle." He says, "I know you can do that. Just say the word, and my servant will be healed." And that just, Jesus marvels at that. And he says, "I haven't found that anywhere else in Israel. This is an outsider, a pure Gentile, and I haven't found what he's got in the Jewish camp." But the second appeal was made, in which he said to the Lord, "I am not worthy." Friends of mine, take that message to the Lord. I don't want him to come into my house. Isn't that something? Striking, is it not? Well, they may be entrusted with important messages. That was that point. Right quickly, number 8. Friends may be able to get me to do things I would not otherwise do. This is a good thing on occasion. It can be a bad thing. It can be good or evil. But friends, since they're my friends, you know, they can use their influence to sway me. It doesn't always work. You know, in 1 Corinthians 16:12, Paul really put forth an effort to try to get Apollos to make a visit to Corinth. The way it's described there, he really wanted him to go and tried to persuade him. And Apollos said, I don't want to go right now. So Paul has to say, he's not coming right now, but later he will. Later he will. It's not his will right now to come. Paul couldn't get it done. But he could get Timothy to stay at Ephesus. So I'm saying sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. But friends can have a tremendous impact on us. And then number 9, they gather around support when things go wrong. You find this in cases like in Acts chapter 9, near the end of Acts 9, the house of Lydia. And Dorcas. And you find it in John 11 at the house of Mary, Martha, and Lazarus, people gathering around, friends coming into the house, trying to give support to the family and loved ones and to show concern and maybe to share prayer, whatever, to pat each other on the back, tell each other old stories, to cry together. You find friends gathering around when things go bad. You find that. And you should find that. And you find that in Scripture. John 11:19, Acts 9:36-43. Then number 9, they may be willing to tell me what I need to hear rather than what I want to hear. And when Paul confronted Peter to the face, he resisted him, he said. Galatians 2:11. Later on, when Peter refers to Paul in 2 Peter 3:15, he says, "Beloved brother Paul, our beloved brother Paul." Friends will tell me what I need to know and need to hear, not just what I want to hear. And then finally, number 11, friends can become disengaged as friends or even become enemies. Job 19:14, Job's friends left him. Where are my friends? His friends left. The three so-called friends showed up and didn't treat him very nicely because they had his whole situation misinterpreted. But his friends, they've gone. A friend can stop being a friend. Has that ever happened to you? It's happened to me. Yes, sirree. Not a good feeling. Well, we were close. I was talking to somebody on the phone the other day, and he was asking me about somebody. And yeah, we used to be friends. It's exactly the case. And now he's become somewhat of an enemy. Friends can become disengaged as friends and even can become enemies. That's the way that it works. Matthew 26:50, Psalm 41:9, there was an Old Testament prophecy that was fulfilled in the life of Judas. My familiar friend has lifted up his heel against me. And when he came out to Jesus in the garden, there in the dark, Jesus knows what's happening, he knows he's coming, and there he is with that traitor's kiss. Jesus says, "Friend." Boy, that had to sting just a little. "Friend, do that for which thou art come." Amazing. Amazing. A lot involved in friendship, more than we've touched on, but these are some things that perhaps heighten our desire for knowledge on the particular topic. I want to be a friend. I want to be a friend to everyone I can be a friend to. I want to be a friend to Jesus, and you're my friends if you do the things that I say. May God help us to be His friends always. If you're here this afternoon and not a Christian, come in faith, repent of your sins, make the good confession, be baptized into Christ. If you've done that and gone astray, I encourage you to come home now. While together we stand, while we sing, won't you come?